Is it always this chaotic?
Yeah, pretty
always.
much. Welcome to the first Long Snapper podcast in what feels like a very long time. It is the off season, although there are pre-season games going on. They don't count. I'm Adam. I have got four people with me, one of whom is an actual guest and an actual guest worth speaking to. Before I introduce him, I have got Hertfordshire's finest Yorkshireman, Pat Jackson. How are you doing, Pat?
Good, thank you, Adam. How are you today?
Yes, very well, thank you. We have got West London's finest South Londoner, Craig Edmonds.
Yeah, nice.
Did I get that the right way around? I don't know.
Yeah, you did. You actually nailed that, mate. Well done.
Swindon's finest Swindonian, Mark Salen.
When you were doing everybody else's, I knew you were going to mention Swindon in mine. I'm not from Swindon, and I don't live in Swindon.
It's where you live and where you were born.
Neither of those things. Do you see the thing that's doing the rounds today on social media about the train that's got the sign at the top that it says like it's depressed because all you can see it saying Swindon, we're in Swindon. It sounds like it's annoyed about where it is. It's excellent. I don't live in Swindon.
He lives in Swindon.
And I'm going to butcher this. I'm going to say Bromley's finest Welshman.
Yeah, that's
Benedict,
accurate.
Benedict Isaacs, as I'm led to believe. How you doing?
Yeah, Dr. Benedict Isaacs, doctorate TBC. If you want to get super specific, I am I am Bromley's greatest Welshman, but I am also a Cardiffian, Bromleyan, I guess. Born and bred in Cardiff, lived in Bromley now for, I don't know, 15 years, something like that, a bit less. It's leafy and quiet here. Reasonably so.
But you still really hate Swansea. No, I assume that's not changed.
I mean, I tend not to acknowledge the place exists usually. but people from Swansea like the NFL as well. So let's not alienate those people. Just alienate the ones who dislike me.
No one
from Swansea listens to our program.
No, and if they well, we will have them
not now.
We don't want you. If you live in Swansea, stop listening now. We don't want you.
God. I mean, only someone from Swindon would say that.
I also should tell anybody listening that before we started, Ben got his daughter to get him a drink. Which is arguably even worse than Craig's normal form of getting his wife to get him a drink. But she did, obligingly.
Worse. I mean, an alcoholic drink as well. Does that make it worse? Like, as a child, I grew up behind a bar. So it all feels very, very normal to me. I once interviewed Rory McIlroy and I realized we had quite a lot in common because he kind of grew up behind a bar. And I was thinking like, oh, look at this. We're sort of similar apart from the fact that like he's like, got 100 million quid in the bank or whatever. And I thought, maybe my daughter can be like a Rory McIlroy. I was like, how could I, like, should I get her playing golf? And he's like, how old is she? I was like, oh, five. And he's like, it's probably a bit late now.
Jesus. Thought,
maybe, like, okay. Maybe we don't have that much in common.
I mean, I'm 44 years old and I still dream of becoming a professional footballer or cricketer or something. But at five, you say your career's over? I'm not having that.
Well, I think if you want to take it to the elite level in some of those individual sports like tennis or golf, if you cannot handle the club or the racket or whatever by the time you're about four, then that's it. You're past it. You're done.
Dear me. Wow. Right. But before we get any further, because you're a Chicago Bears fan, apart from anything else, just for fun and no reason whatsoever, I've got five little trivia questions for you.
Okay.
See how many you can get. One or two might sound like they're being a bit unkind, but just remember,
it's about the Bears. Yeah, it would seem that way. I take everything as a slight.
To put this into context, we normally do a quiz at the start of the show, and if we get guests on, we tend to do a quiz based on their team. And we used to have like a league table, I think, and
yeah,
that disappeared many, many months ago.
I mean, it's similar to that, but I think it might be 3-4 years since. We did
probably is. But
let's see how we get on. If you think it seems a bit nasty, just remember that you posted a YouTube clip of the Bears Titans game from 2012 recently. which
was a good one, though.
It might be the most, the quickest I've ever seen a game fall apart watching my team.
That was harrowing. That was the one of the amazing Peanut Tillman games. I think he caused something like 18 fumbles in that game. It was fantastic. God bless you, Peanut Tillman.
10 of those were in the first quarter. It was just an absolute shit show. Just remember that.
Okay. Fair point.
All right. First question. Nice, easy one to start. What was the team's original franchise name before they became the Bears?
The Decatur Staleys, then the Chicago Staleys, of course, for one season. One season of each.
Yeah, you're going to smash this, I think.
Bonus point, please.
Okay, which member of the... Now, this came up on a quiz recently we had, but I'm hoping you won't have heard it. Which member of the 1985 Chicago Bears Super Bowl winning team is a current NFL head coach?
Oh, Ron Rivera.
Yeah, that's two.
Although he didn't play in 85, did he? I think he held out and he missed the season. Think he regrets that?
No.
Oh boy.
So does that mean your question's inaccurate, Adam? Is that what we're saying?
No, it's still accurate. He was a Chicago Bear. He just didn't end up getting on the field that season. Poor Chico. Love Ron Rivera.
There you go. This is going to be a very easy 5 out of 5, isn't it?
Okay. I think it's looking that way. That's what happens when you get proper guests on, right? Not talking about Rich anymore.
Hey.
Oh, don't defend Rich.
It's fine.
Which quarterback threw 33 touchdowns and 35 interceptions for the Chicago Bears?
That feels Jay Cutlery, but also Eric Kramery. I'm going to have to say Jay Cutler then. Am I wrong?
You are wrong.
Give me a look.
You are wrong. Does anyone else want to have a little guess at that?
That to me feels an awful lot like it would be a Rex Grossman style stat.
Gross by nature.
Yeah, you're spot on. It was the only other man to take the Chicago Bears to the Super Bowl. Okay, question four. When Cody Parkey attempted a game-winning field goal in the 2018 playoffs, which two parts of the apparatus did the ball strike in order?
I want to say...
That's a dick question.
I know.
I want to say left, upright, and then goalpost. But I do not... I mean, I can hear the double doink in my head.
I assume you've only ever watched it once.
I barely watched it the once. It was like through kind of like my eyes, trying to cover my eyes so I didn't see it. Tell me the two parts of the apparatus. Was it left goalpost and then left upright and then goalpost?
I assume you mean crossbar.
Crossbar.
Yeah, that's correct. Yes. You should be really proud of that.
I'm going to put that one on the CV.
finally, to bring it up to four, who scored the most touchdowns? And by touchdowns, I don't mean passing touchdowns. I mean possessing the ball in the end zone touchdowns. Who scored the most in the 2022 season for the Bears? With 8.
Yeah. It feels like it should have been David Montgomery, but I feel like it wasn't. The sensible answer is David Montgomery. So I'm going to say David Montgomery, and I feel I'm going to catch myself out on that.
You did catch yourself out. What's anyone else think?
Herbert?
No.
Fields?
It is. Justin Fields.
Yeah. Now, my first thought was Fields. Then because you said not passing, I thought, right. Yeah, this is a bit more straightforward. But yeah, I went Fields, then Montgomery, and I thought, it could be Khalil Herbert, but Montgomery got the bulk of the carries. But yeah, I mean, Justin Fields, the man is a god. My daughter says he's the son I never had, because I will just defend him. Just whatever he does, I will defend him. Like, say what you like about me, never speak ill of my daughter or Justin Fields.
Well, there you go. After the start, I would say it's slightly disappointing 3 out of 5, but
yeah,
you were maybe unlucky.
Cheers, kind of you.
Cheers, mate. Thanks for coming.
I mean, the thing is that the quarterback question is, in effect, who had a lot of arm talent but made bad decisions and was quarterback of the Bears? Like, okay.
Yeah,
that doesn't really narrow
it
down.
There's a few of them, yeah. There's a good list.
Yeah,
that's unlucky. I'll give you that.
I actually really liked Rex Grossman, Sexy Rexy. I liked his confidence and, yeah, the sex cannon.
That Super Bowl still annoys me, but it's just because it's the Colts. So I need to get past that. It's my problem, not yours.
anyway, it's also my problem.
I mean, it's... Yeah, if Rex Grossman had beaten Peyton Manning, I'm not sure where that would go down in history.
I wonder, right, if the Bears had won that game, would it be that we'd be talking about Peyton Manning as one of like the greatest quarterback to never win the Super Bowl? That it would have just defeated him so much. Maybe they would have still got to that one and lost to the Saints, and it would have just fizzled out and he wouldn't have gone to the Broncos. Who knows? And I mean, Christ... The one he won at the Broncos, he didn't win it. The defense won it. So
yeah, that's damn right.
But I kind of feel that one he deserved.
Wait, wasn't that a record-setting offensive season for the Broncos? Don't get me wrong, that defense was.
I think the previous couple of years, maybe, but not that year.
He was rubbish.
Yeah. Oh, was it? Okay. He went there and set all sorts of numbers. Wasn't that Decker and that lot that year?
Demaryius Thomas and
It was
Emmanuel Sanders, I think.
Yeah, that Super Bowl, it was the defense, though.
Yeah, but that was the Super Bowl with Cam Newton not jumping on the fumble because he didn't want to hurt himself, and it all kind of spiraled out of control from there.
It was a terrible Super Bowl.
Von Miller was unbelievable.
It was the one at Levi's, wasn't it? I kind of feel that Peyton Manning deserved that for his previous play at Denver. Oh. So it's sort of I could reconcile that one, but not at the Colts. Nothing at the Colts ever.
I've got a story related to that Super Bowl. So one afternoon in the run-up to that Super Bowl, I got a phone call from Nat Coombs. And he said, do you want to go on BBC World Service and talk about Super Bowl 50? They've asked me, I can't do it. And I've told them I can recommend someone else. And I was like, yeah, okay, I'll do it. And he's like, it's in a couple of hours. I'm like, yes, fine. So they call me up and they say, okay, you know, come to Broadcasting House, the one not like Shepherd's Bush, but the one on Regent Street, I want to say, the little one. So I go along there and I'm there and I've come straight from my office and I'm wearing like a grey Nike sweatshirt and a pair of jeans and just the usual sort of thing. And I've like got all my notes and I've got the program with me. The program had arrived at my office that day. And I turn up and I'm like, okay, I don't know what World Service is going to ask me, and I'm just making notes. I thought, okay, well, I've got everything I need in front of me, and I'm sitting there in the green room, and this woman comes up and starts putting makeup on me, and I thought, they don't do that for radio. World Service is radio, and I start googling BBC World Service, and it's like, you know, a global radio, like
it's like the armed forces in Sudan or whatever, isn't it?
They're doing everything. I'm like, oh my god, what the hell is this? And I realize it's not the World Service, it's BBC World. And BBC World, for those who don't know, is the BBC's global news channel. So you don't get it in the UK and some things
hotels.
Both. Exactly. Yeah. So most of the UK stuff isn't on there. And if it's made for BBC World, it's usually not on BBC news channel. But I'm there like, this is not what I was told. Like, I'm not saying this to them. I'm saying this to myself. Like, oh my god, I'm not really ready. I mean, the makeup, I look good, but I'm there wearing like a grey sweatshirt, and eventually they just kind of put me behind the desk. I've got the program with me, not my book with all the scrawled notes, because you can't just go leafing through that while they're talking to you. And I don't remember the name of the guy who was the like the news presenter there, but it's the sort of, if you saw him, you'd be like, oh yeah, that guy, I've seen him a million times on the news. And it was him asking me about the Super Bowl and me feeling like the whole time, I'm just wearing a gray sweatshirt here. Like, I'm not, and I admittedly, I do have a lot of nice gray sweatshirts. This wasn't even one of my nice gray sweatshirts. This was just I just thrown it on. It was mortifying. It was really stressful. Like, I've done TV, but I've been prepared for TV, and I was not prepared for TV at that point. So whenever I think of that Super Bowl, I think of me in that BBC news studio. And the thing is that when you're on the news and you're in a studio with them, they're asking you questions and you're talking to them, right? You're not addressing the audience. But the first thing I did was I turned straight and looked at the main camera and started talking, like thinking, wait, I'm not the host. I better turn back to this guy and do it properly. So there were probably some people sitting in a hotel room in like Singapore thinking, what the hell is this guy with the grey sweatshirt doing? Why is he staring down the barrel of the camera talking about Cam Newton? This sucks. So if this guy ever writes a book, I'm never going to buy it. So when I think of that Super Bowl, just me in a grey sweatshirt, worried that I am not fully prepared without my notes in front of me.
Apparently, it's on YouTube somewhere. Yeah, it's gotta be on YouTube somewhere.
Oh, I told people at the time, like, oh god, this is happening, and I had lots of people like, I'm gonna try and get BBC World, and I still don't know anyone who's ever seen it, and I don't know how you go through the archive to find it now, but I'd be terrified to see it.
I'm filing that away with things I need to find and see one day, along with Craig's appearance on Golden Balls.
Yes.
Nice.
I had that for a while. I had Golden Balls on Series Link just in case it came up again.
Like on Challenge or whatever, yeah. Like all the old reruns.
Yeah. I never
Every
found
few
it.
Years I'll get a little message. I just saw it. I said, yeah, keep it to yourself, geez.
Right. It is still there. I'm getting it back on Series Link.
I was not expecting to start the show today with the worst thing I've ever heard about Nat Coombs. Now, the bar is very high, but still.
Oh, that doesn't sound like Nat's fault. I can't. I mean, unless he's deliberately thrown you under the bus.
Yeah, he did deliberately do it. And I was afterwards, I was like, it wasn't World Service, it was World News. He's like, oh, was it? So yeah, it was. I can understand someone saying it and you thinking it's something else. I mean, you know, it's if you're thinking World Service, if you don't know what BBC World is as well, you might just think, oh, they mean the World Service. So no, he didn't throw me under the bus. But yeah, it was a little bit embarrassing. All's well, all's well.
For anyone who's watching us on BBC World, rather than listening to the World Service, you'll be able to see that I'm holding a book up called The American Football Revolution by Ben Isaacs. I say by Ben Isaacs. I haven't read this yet from cover to cover. I've had a good flick through, and you've kind of done what Terry Wogan used to do and get the listeners to write the show. You've sought out loads of excellent, knowledgeable people and put this thing together, which probably was actually harder to do. So I
thought you were going to say it's meant to be by Ben Isaacs, but it's actually listed in some outlets as being by someone else, which I discovered the day it was published that it was some issue with the Nielsen database that it was populating certain sites the wrong way and crediting the book to a person who's written some football books for Pitch Publishing. So I had
to not James Dixon, Pitch. Not James Dixon.
No, please. No, it wasn't him. I don't remember the name, but if you search for the book on certain outlets, you may realize, oh yeah, that's the name he was talking about. It may already be rectified by now. I was told it with a couple of days.
Hopefully, I'm sure. Well, I found it very easily. If you want to search for it, I can't believe you're one of two Chicago Bears fans I know that are authors, which is a really weird coincidence. as I mentioned, James Dixon, who also has a book out, but he's not coming on here. Something about rugby, much less exciting sport. With
yes,
an oval shaped ball.
His previous book was with Pitch as well, and there was like a private Pitch Publishing Twitter community, and he was on there the other day saying, am I okay to publish my am I okay to promote my non-Pitch book here? And it went a bit,
shameless.
And it went a bit quiet. Yeah.
Oh, that is terrible. What I thought we'd quickly start with as sort of a nod to this is, I don't know if we've done this before, but maybe each of us say what our first memory of getting to the NFL is, because I think that's really on brand for this. So this the book starts by talking about 1982 when Channel 4 launched and them deciding to show a sport called American football on the almost with the weird idea that no one's watching anyway, we might as well get anything we can. But it's an inauspicious start and a strike year as well. My memories don't quite go that far back. No particular reason, Craig. You've played the game in this country. Were you a fan before that, or was it playing the game? What kind of was your first memory of it here?
Yeah, it's funny because we was obviously thinking about when we was talking about the pod and getting Ben on. And I had a little flip through certainly the opening pages, and it's mad because the first sort of introduction to football for me was NFL Europe. So I don't know how old I would have been, maybe 10, 11 at this time. But I remember Channel 4, must have been around the same time basketball's. And I've always been a massive sports fan. So I love sport, played football, played basketball as a kid. So Channel 4 and they had everything, didn't they? Italian football, a lot. I was from that era. But after NFL Europe died, I never thought about it. And it never really sort of comes up when I talk about NFL or think about my journey, because I got into it much later. I remember, shout out to a guy I went to school with, Conrad Patrick. He was playing Britball. And I remember going to his house, I must have been like 17, 18. So this would have been, 2004-ish. And obviously, that was a pretty sick Super Bowl. And he had like pads up hanging on his wall. And I thought, that's dope. They look sick. And then I thought, I could do that shit. I could play that game. And I went, and it was fantastic. And so that 2002 to 2010 was my real sort of introduction, falling in love with football. But I do remember that early 90s, just these huge, massive dudes running at each other. And there was a team in London and they seemed to be making money and it was professional. And then you go back and you look at what that story really was like. It always annoyed me once I got into American football. So I probably played for about 6 years over two stints, and I was 21-ish when I first started playing, and then went back at about 29, but I was doing martial arts at the time. And I always thought when I first started, because I was, as a kid, 13, 14, I was a bit of a chubby kid, but I was athletic. I was still big, strong and fast. And the only thing you could do at that size was play rugby or lose weight. And I did the latter, luckily. but for the viewers, I'm flexing. you don't get the benefit of that. And I always thought, do you know what? Had we had football here, somebody would have turned me into a linebacker or a running back. You know, I would have been able to, yeah. And by the time I got to it, unfortunately, you know, I felt like I'd missed a chance. Because I was in that period where actually the second wave of Brits started getting opportunities through various pathways in the NFL. I think, you know, we've learned so much from football, like in terms of sports coverage. Ben, you said it before we hit on air. The way the Americans do cover sports and the access and the detail just pales in comparison to, yeah, man. I fell in love with it the minute I was exposed to it. And that's a lot to you talk about it. That I just remember that grainy look, 30 people in the stand, but massive dudes just chugging into each other.
Oh, Craig, what you said really has reminded me of something I've always thought about, how there must be, because obviously, even let's say someone's parents are big into the NFL and a kid grows up like my daughter, she's grown up around the sport. You know, she went to her first NFL game, she was like four. So she's, you know, she's been around it. But like, even if you're, for a start, male and you've got the build for it and you've got parents who are into it, because you are unlikely to get real, real coaching until you get to a certain age, you're obviously so far behind where you'd be if you were in America. And I do wonder, there'll be like somewhere like a bloke on a building site and a bloke who's selling flats and all this stuff, where if they'd been born in America, they might already be on like their second contract and be like set for life. Because they might have all the physical tools, but because the coaching is so specialized, you would never get the chance to realize that. And it's not enough to be like, the NFL Academy is fantastic, and I think we will see people coming through, but you've got to have that coaching at a young age to actually be able to, you know, and like, great, you've just no idea what things would have been like if you'd been born in like the south of Texas rather than the south of London. What might have been? Do you know what I mean? You just never know.
Probably won the Heisman. But I'll be honest with you.
There'd been a complete draft bust, I imagine.
But you make a good point. And the thing is, and in the time when I first got into it, like I played luckily over a period of time over two stints in Britball, and my first experience of it, there were so many gatekeepers. You've got older guys who were tapped into when there was, you know, the wider connections to the NFL, the NFL Europe come out of that. And because the early framework of BAFL wasn't great, it isn't great now. There's been huge strides, and shout out to Hertfordshire Cheetahs who do a great job. We've got, multiple teams across different ages, and the women's team, well-funded. It's probably one of the best Britball organisations in the country. I truly mean that. But, like, you had these guys who were, you know, maybe had some glory days in the late 90s, got that exposure, got that coaching, and they didn't want to share the knowledge. They had a couple of pals who they all were reliving the glory days. And that was, you know, you speak to any Britballer, particularly from that 2000-2010 period, they'll tell you that how the game was unfortunately held back by these old guard who didn't want to let go and didn't want to push it on.
That's really interesting, and it's something I don't know enough about, and I would love to know more of, like, the internal politics of Britball, because it's like any kind of niche interest, there will be people who will feel like, well, I'm in a position of power now, and I want to be that big fish in a small pond, and I don't want people to take that. And I get it. I don't like it, but kind of human nature for certain people to protect their position in that way rather than to kind of grow things. And I feel it's something that as a fan community, we've got to make sure that we don't fall into that, because it's so easy for a lot of people to moan about some of the new fans and like, oh, that person's only been a fan for like 5 minutes and they got tickets for Spurs and I didn't, and all this sort of stuff. And like, we're all in this together. I mean, we're in a niche, and the fact that we're here talking on a podcast means we're in a niche of a niche. So like, people such as yourselves have such an influence on people's attitudes to the sports to make sure that it's actually, let's spread the net wider. Let's not keep this to ourselves, because like the very act of like having a podcast is kind of like, you don't want to make it seem like, oh no, this is just our little thing, you know, like this can be everybody's. So, you know, I tip my hat to you for having that sort of attitude, and for you, Craig, having gone through it and seen that other side. Like you said, gatekeepers was the word you used, which is perfect. And the idea of like, no, this is my thing. You're not taking my crown. Like, dude, yeah, it's the crown you get in Burger King. Like, let's all just be involved in this and see where we can take it, you know?
100%. The game's in a much better place, though. British football's in a much better place today.
I certainly get that impression. Much more inclusive, much more open to everything, which is great.
That's good. I mean, it's never going to be. I mean, I'll move on. Mark, I think you've kind of got a similar experience to me. Around the same sort of time, like late 80s, early 90s, just picking up Channel 4. Getting into it.
And watching like the Mick Luckhurst inspired, like, was it First and Ten? Or First Down? I can't remember what it was called now, but the highlights on
the magazine show. Yeah. There was Red 42 that was a Saturday magazine show.
Right. And the highlights show on Channel on Sunday nights.
Did that have a name other than American football? I'm not sure.
I'm sure it had something. But anyway, I digress. And I assume it was like highlights, like not realising at the time. I was always a week behind because it was clearly the highlights from the previous Sunday.
Yeah, but it didn't matter.
It didn't. No, it didn't. No, because
you didn't know who's going to win.
Anyway. Yeah. Yeah. And for me, it was, so my dad was into the game more so then than he is now, really, just because he doesn't have the channels that it's shown on. But yeah, it was watching it. he was quite into it, and in kind of like the, as like a 9 year old in the late 80s, I was watching, and like one of the first games I remember watching was the K-Gun inspired Buffalo Bills that were a team that were exciting to watch. Didn't get very far in the postseason that year, but I remember the game. I don't think I've ever told you this, Craig, but the first game that I remember proper, the highlights show that was on, was a week 16 game from that season. They beat the Jets 37-0. And the Jets were an awful side back then, like a
yeah, we were dog, mate.
Let me just get this straight. That was the main game on the highlights.
It was the game that they showed. Yeah, because
they showed a 37-0 game as the main.
Yeah, and it was the I think it was because it confirmed the Bills as the AFC East champions for that season. They went on to lose to the Browns in the first round of the playoffs, but it was that game where I was like, this is my team. Little did I know that the next year they'd go on lose the Super Bowl with wide right.
That was as good as it got ever. I'm looking forward to actually educating myself with this book and some of these details, because my memory's playing tricks. I'm sure it is, because it's a Sunday night show and it was 8:30. I specifically remember 8:30. Mick Lutcast as well was the same guy, I remember him and Gary Imlach. Yeah. And it was, there was a game, or there were highlights of other games as well, I think.
Yes.
But I can't.
That would have been the case.
But my bedtime, I had to go to bed. Most of the way. Yeah, exactly. Most of the way through the show every week. And it pissed me off every single week.
Correct. I totally remember that. Yeah.
Cut the thing short.
Yeah. There was a point where, and this was in terms of kind of like the broadcast history of Channel 4, and I'm not sure exactly what year this started, but I do know it was when Fox got the NFC package and they started putting the score, the score permanently on the screen, which obviously we're used to now, but Fox were the first ones to do that for the NFL. And we got to a point with Channel 4 where, in the early days, you'd have the highlights at 6 p.m. or 5:30 from the previous week. And then when it got to Sunday night, they would start showing. And I, having worked in like broadcast as well, I still don't really know how you do this. But they would go on air, let's say 8:30, and they'd be showing highlights of a game that hadn't actually finished yet. So you'd be there. The game would have kicked off at 6 p.m. our time, but the show's starting at 8:30. So they're showing, I don't know how you cut together the highlights at that point. You've got to be doing it as it goes along. And then, you know, like what happens then if it goes to overtime? And if you presumably you have to have factored in enough time for that, which is a feat of broadcasting. And clearly Channel 4's commitment at that point to making sure that we were getting things that felt fresh and up to date. Because obviously we had first down and everything by that point. You would have all the game reports on Thursday morning. And at that point, you could have seen the scores on teletext as well. But they did this. And even then, as a kid, I thought, like, what witchcraft is this? Like, I know these games are being played. Right, how am I watching highlights of something that's currently happening? Like, that seemed impressive. And just the way that Channel 4 had to evolve and go with it is, I think, really interesting, and something that's touched on in the book. And Craig, I'm glad you mentioned the Italian football, because Italian football was part of the reason that the sport started to struggle in this country. It was by 1992, American football was, in the words of Chris Milner, he said it had become like uncool by that point. Basketball had become cool, in part because of the Dream Team, not because there was fantastic basketball TV coverage, but because of Michael Jordan, especially Nike, the whole Jordan line, everything with the Dream Team. Basketball felt more American, more hip-hop, just cooler in general compared with the NFL, which had started to look a little bit nerdy. You've got the birth of the Premier League in 1992, but at that point, let's not forget, very few people had access to Sky Sports. But Channel 4 obviously put an absolute masterstroke. Let's put Italian football on at that point. And I say in the book that you were much more likely to see an Italian football shirt in a British high street than an NFL top, which a few years
ago. Those shirts for fire.
Those 90s
Italian kits.
Yeah.
That shit was fire.
Peak. So. That was peak. So,
the fake ones you could get on holiday. for next to nothing. Oh,
too many of them. But yeah, it just the whole Channel 4 thing, and Christ, there's probably a book to be written just about Channel 4's coverage of the NFL. And like, I was talking to someone yesterday for an interview that they were doing with me, and we were talking about how, and again, this is something in the book. I'm going to tell you so much about the book that you feel like you've read it.
No need to buy it. No, just listen to this.
Just listen to this episode.
I'm going to buy it, Ben. He's like that. I'm going to buy this book. I've got it, but I'm going to buy the book, bro.
You're supporting the community, exactly. In the first few months of Channel 4 being on, they showed 90 minutes highlights of the Rose Bowl, and it was like had happened the day before. So we would wait a week for NFL highlights, but for some reason, they decided to show 90 minutes of college football.
Is that just because it was Saturday rather than Sunday?
They never did it again. Oh. I would like to know just some of the decision making. And the problem is that anything that happens with a broadcaster now, there's a full digital paper trail. It's all there. There's a whole archive. Hmm. But things back then, like, there'll be people involved in the decisions who are probably dead. Stuff was written on paper. It's gone. Like, we'll probably never know some of the things that actually went into actually getting that on air back then. Like, whose idea was it? And so I, as part of the research, I was looking through old issues of the TV Times. And for those of you old enough to remember this,
hang on. Before, am I right in saying, I know it changed, but when I was small, the Radio Times only told you what was on the BBC, and TV Times only told you ITV Channel 4?
Correct.
Is that
what
you were?
Law. Yeah. So that was the law. There was a law. There was a law that you were not allowed to have the others, and newspapers could print the day's TV, but they couldn't have a weekly TV listings magazine. And then once the law changed, every newspaper did. And obviously the TV Times had everything and the Radio Times had everything. But I knew I only had to look at old issues of the TV Times.
Yeah.
And I found online, okay, here is the issue that is the Channel 4 launch issue. And it's got like a collage on the cover of all these different sorts of things that are going to be on Channel 4. And I can see, and bear in mind, I'm looking on my screen and it's a scan of this cover. And I can see there's two American football players like sat presumably on a bench, helmets off. And I'm like, what team is it? So it must have been like a red jersey, white numbers. I'm like, who are these players?
I remember you posting this.
Right. Oh, well, don't give away the punchline then.
Well, I think
Adam will do that to you as well.
No. I can't remember who it was now, but I...
Adam all over!
So
I had the answer for you. I'm just saying.
I was there kind of racking my brains and thinking, okay, well, look, Cardinals, 49ers, like trying to figure out the numbers. And also, I thought, you know, could it be college football? I thought, no, you can tell from like the guys' faces that they're too old to be in college, even though everyone looked older back then. Racking my brain, I put it on social media, and there's people saying, oh, you know, like that could be so-and-so with the 49ers, that could be so-and-so with the Cardinals. And eventually someone said, that's Burt Reynolds. It's a scene from The Longest Yard.
Oh, that's not what I remember then.
I squint a bit, and I'm like... Yeah, that's Bert, but he shaved the moustache off. They shaved the moustache. It's also known as Mean Machine in this country, of course. Yeah. But the moustache gets shaved off, and I was like, oh, if it had the tash, I would have recognised that as Burt Reynolds. And yes, in the first few nights of Channel 4, they showed Mean Machine / The Longest Yard, maybe because they were going to show American football. Who knows? I would like to know the decisions that went into it, and I feel that it's all lost to the sands of time now.
Speaking of decisions in Channel 4, can anyone remember the move from Mick Luckhurst to the Dangerous Brothers? Do you remember those two clowns?
Right. That wasn't from Luckhurst to them. And they weren't the Dangerous. I know what you mean. What were they called? But it was the 87 season we had them
right.
for 1 year. Oh, was it the Vicious Boys? Is that what they were called?
It might have been the Vicious Boys. That rings a bell.
So it was weird
it was two horrendous comedians that when you go from someone who had played the game or like knowledgeable to those two.
We had them in 87 and they had to talk us through the strike. So that's heavy lifting. But we had them in 87, but who did we have in 86? Does anyone remember off the top of their heads?
That's a bit before my time.
It was Frank Gifford.
Oh, okay.
Wow. So Frank Gifford, you know, New York Giants Hall of Famer, broadcast legend in America. So he was doing Monday Night Football at the time. And presumably he would record all his segments from the US. You know, it wasn't like he was flying over and then flying back the next day for Monday Night Football. So they had Frank Gifford during the 86 season, which kind of worked out nicely because the Giants won the Super Bowl that year. But yeah, we went from a Hall of Famer, legendary broadcaster to the Vicious Boys, who were terrible. And I remember before the Super Bowl, Super Bowl 22, they've got them all out in San Diego. Like, imagine that gig they had that year. They sent them off to San Diego for like a week before to like film all this stuff. And they do a sit down interview with George Best. So George Best living in California at the time. And they're saying like, oh, you know, do you like it? And he said, yeah, you know, I watch it sometimes, you know, it's a big thing over here because he must be living in Southern California. And they said to him, oh, but you don't get the singing like you do at a British football match, do you? And he said, no, you don't get a brick through your head either. I thought, okay.
I mean,
happy Super Bowl night.
He obviously hadn't been to Oakland, just saying. Pat, you, just to square the original circle, you were sort of mid-90s. Is that about right? Obviously, the Jags coming in, which is bonkers to... I mean, I remember the Panthers and the Jags being announced as two new teams, thinking, okay, is this normal? This is what...
Did you think, where's Jacksonville? Because I think there were people in America, because like Jacksonville were not expected to get it. St. Louis were expected to get that expansion team. And Jacksonville, I mean, it's worked out in Jacksonville. But yeah, please, yeah. I digress.
Yeah, a lot of hard work from Wayne Weaver and guys behind the scenes. No, I did. I started watching in 95 when we became a two television household, which was super exciting at the time. I got to sit upstairs and watch. Very much so.
Your family's doing all right for themselves?
Not bad at all. Yeah, so watching Channel 4.
Catalog. Oh, Radio Rentals, putting 50 pence in it.
Yes.
Good times. Yeah. So I was watching on a Saturday morning in my parents' bedroom on the spare TV, Football Italia, Trans World Sport, all that sort of stuff. And yeah, NFL Blitz with Gary Imlach and this brand new shiny franchise, Jacksonville Jaguars. And it just felt like destiny to pick on these plucky underdogs to support. And they lost their first game 10-3 and were miserable. And that's it. You know, I'm a Sheffield Wednesday fan growing up and we just started falling out of leagues. So it was bang on brands to be supporting a team performing at that sort of level.
But there's something to be said about being in at the ground floor, you know, and you could be like, I've been a fan of that team since day one. And I remember I was like, so in basically around that sort of time-ish, I'm talking like mid-90s, and I was like, I was heavy into hip-hop, and I had certain friends who were kind of moving over to kind of like jungle/drum and bass. And I was like, it's not as good though. And they said, but it's brand new and it's ours. And they really like the idea of being in on the ground floor. And I think for someone getting into the sport, when there's two brand new teams and just being like, okay, well, this is the start of something. I think that's really appealing.
Yeah. And this conversation goes very differently when you have it with English folks who understand where you're coming from, British folks, I should say. And when you have it with American Jags fans and they're like, so what do you mean you got the highlights 6 days after the games were on? And what do you mean that...
What do you mean there were highlights of Jags games?
And live scores on a page that scrolled, this CFAX thing, I can't imagine what you're trying to describe to me. It's wild.
I've never successfully explained teletext to an American.
Especially now, most of the, like, I've been talking to Jags fans who are like, you know, mid-20s, so they've just grown up with everything on the internet at their fingertips. So you don't need it. But trying to describe a world without it and without live coverage of everything all of the time. It's some really interesting conversation.
You can't explain teletext. You couldn't possibly explain that, say, compare it to a web page that if the signal's not great and it loads, letters are just randomly all over the place. You couldn't explain that.
You have to wait for it to scroll back around to your team.
Only the very best people have followed an entire 90 minutes of football on Saturday just by the three pages on teletext. Well, to see if the scores had changed the next time they came around.
I remember even as recently, like probably 5 years ago, my son's 14, trying to explain to him what live TV meant. As a child, you grow up now, and the idea of telly happening at the time it's showing, you couldn't get it. What are we talking about? Just fast forward, Dad. No. Not how this works, mate.
We've not invented time travel yet. We can't get through to the second half of this game. Unfortunately, you're gonna have to sit through halftime analysis. Sorry, you're gonna have to listen to it.
Yeah.
Absolutely mad. I think back, like I said, my mind plays tricks and trying to remember exactly. Like, I can't remember a specific game, but I know it was Warren Moon that did it for me. But it was like all my mates at primary school, we were just sort of late primary school, just kind of about to leave. And we all kind of picked a team. No one else picked the Houston Oilers. I think there were four or five of us that were into it. And I think we all picked different teams for whatever reason. And they were all just because we liked the look of something or we liked the look of a player or whatever it was. I remember one Super Bowl was on the West Coast, and it was the first time that I was aware, like they broadcast them live, I think, since the 1982 from the start, didn't they? But
yeah.
The first time when it was a game on the West Coast, I don't know which Super Bowl it was. But I remember unsuccessfully trying to persuade my dad that I should stay up for it. 11:30 kickoff. And I don't think previously I twigged what time they were, and I just caught up with them later. But anyway, he wasn't having it. School the next day, blah, blah, blah. And then thinking to myself, oh, excellent. Next year it's in Miami or Tampa or whatever. It'll be earlier. The time difference. I'm going to be able to watch it. No.
Oh, sweet naive child.
Yeah. But there was no way of getting that, the kickoff times or that sort of information. You just had to wait for it to happen.
Obviously, you know, we've been talking on Twitter about like uniform numbers and the horrors of modern uniform numbers. And if there's one thing I kind of want to rail against in the modern NFL, it's actually the fact that Super Bowls will now only take place in NFL stadiums. And I completely understand why. It's partly to persuade, you know, the local councils to actually spend $500 million kicking that into a new stadium. But the first outdoor Super Bowl I remember properly watching was Super Bowl 21 in the Rose Bowl. And there is nothing like a Rose Bowl Super Bowl because it starts in daylight and you see the sun come down. You see the color change completely. You only get that on the West Coast because of when the times are where it's daylight and then it's dusk and this beautiful pink sky that you get in the Rose Bowl, and we'll never get that again. That's never going to happen. And that to me is that's one of the things I miss the most about 80s NFL Super Bowls in the Rose Bowl. God, they were pretty.
There was a Dallas Buffalo one, wasn't there, that
yeah,
the Leon Lett play was in that stadium. I remember watching that, and that it just just sexy.
Yeah,
even in grainy 1990s 4x3 television, it was sexy.
Yeah,
but you look back at old footage now, and you think, what was somehow there's something about the HD.
When I show my son highlights of those Bills Super Bowls in the 90s. He watches it and like the comments he makes are like, how did you watch this? Like, how on earth?
Bro, I think that. I look at the old footage, I think, how the bloody hell did I start? I used to wait. I couldn't. I used to love it. Is shit, mate. If you look at any of that old telly, it's like, it literally looks like it's like Stickman. It's crazy to think that we've watched it. But
I moan when something's not in 4K. Like, I feel like I'm tolerating 1080p NFL coverage. Like, okay, I'll deal with it for now, but they need to up their game. But like, but this is another amazing kind of gateway drug into the NFL in those early days was the NFL Films videotapes that you could buy. Because like when you watch, like if you watch an old TV broadcast from the 80s or 90s of an NFL game, you really see how poor the quality is. And the thing is that, not to get too nerdy on it, but American broadcast standards were not as good as UK ones. It had didn't have the same kind of color depth. So they're lower quality than ours was at the time. You transfer it to our TVs, it looks even worse. So that was poor. But then NFL film stuff, you can watch highlights of from NFL films of Super Bowl I, and you'll think like, this is like, this looks good, because it was filmed like on cinema film, you know. It was made like if you saw a film from the 1960s that had been restored in the cinema, it would look great. If you watch a TV show from the 1960s, it obviously looks, it's completely unwatchable. But that NFL film stuff, and I remember buying videos as a kid, or getting the videos bought for me, I should say, and being absolutely blown away, not really realizing, oh, this looks so much better than the TV coverage. But the way they made the sport look, even if you didn't understand the nuances, they kind of got you inside things. You would see the impact. You would see like the slow motion of like the arm going back from the quarterback. You would see the whole thing in a completely different way you could never get just from TV. And NFL films is, I think, an underrated part of why the NFL became popular at that time. And still now you go back and that stuff is incredible. NFL films are absolutely unreal, the way that they make things. And other sports leagues in America, it took them decades to catch up. I've got somewhere like a DVD box set. Yeah, Craig, don't talk to your son about DVDs. Like, my daughter's like, what the hell is this? But it was...
At least you didn't have to rewind those, you know.
But I got... It was like a Chicago Bulls DVD box set, and it was like classic games from the all those championships with Michael Jordan, but it also had like the official NBA films like story of the season. And you compare those from the 90s with what the NFL was doing even in the 60s, and it was light years away. It took everyone else so long to catch up, because NFL films, you know, like Steve Sable, Ed Sable, they'd you know gone to the NFL, sold them on this idea, and the NFL were like, okay, give it a go. And of course, it was amazing. And I'm sure there's a lot of UK fans who came into the sport in the 80s whose head was really turned by NFL films and those tapes with from Vestron Video. They were unreal. Loved them.
But you say about the original broadcast not being as good. Whatever the quality was, I would still tape a Super Bowl in long play because it wouldn't fit on a standard, thereby reducing the quality even further. But cool. If you have Pat Summerall and John Madden, who cares? You know, that bring me. I'd go back to that grainy footage if we could have those two back calling games. But nothing's ever going to be the same, is it?
Murder, she wrote. I for so long, because obviously, John and Pat would get first on CBS, I want to say, and then on Fox, they would get that channel's game of the week. So it was always the biggest game. And because of that, that meant we tended to get more of John and Pat than most other crews. So, you know, we'd got a lot of that. And so as a kid, hearing Pat Summerall say, murder, she wrote, I used to think, why does he do that? And it was great then when they did the Football Life on Pat Summerall to find out this was just, he was taking the piss. Yeah. And it was just this game that they had of like, how big a pause can I get away with?
Well, just the idea there's a comma in the name of the show and then a question mark. That's why I think it comes from that. But like, yeah.
But yeah, it was at some point, if you haven't watched the Pat Summerall murder show, I assume it's that one rather than the John Madden one. If you haven't watched it, watch it even just for that. Or just Google Pat Summerall murder she wrote, because that segment will come up. And like, NFL broadcasts were so much slicker than any sports broadcast we had in this country. And yet they're larking about. Like, how many millions of people are watching and they're just messing around? Like, amazing.
You still get a bit of that with, say, Kevin Harlan. He'll have a bit of fun with some of those things at times, but it's definitely moved on. There's a chapter in your book about Madden, and that hit. I think you also say at the start that there's a chapter for everybody, a chapter that everybody will relate to. I suspect there are about 12 of those for me. But the Madden one, that was something, I think the Mega Drive. So it was a bit after I started watching, but playing the first time playing Madden, it was phenomenal. It just blew me away. The level of detail in such an early version of the game, it seems ludicrous now. But I'm like, hang on, this is Warren Moon. I know that because it says a one below the little sprite of the player.
And it looked just about enough like the uniform to feel yes. Like this, it felt enough of an approximation that you could tell if you knew the sport and you just quickly saw that sprite, you'd know what team that was meant to be. And we'll never know exactly how many people got into the sport through playing that game. But that game was a big seller while the sport wasn't massively popular. In fact, its popularity was going down. So many people learned the intricacies of the game through that. Someone told me they used it like Wikipedia. They would put it on and they would look at players. Like, that's ingenious. And we couldn't just go onto Game Pass or YouTube and watch things, but in the off season we could just play Madden. And it was like that was our Game Pass.
Yeah.
I remember getting Madden. I was very young, can't remember how old. And I liken it a lot to FIFA. You give kids FIFA now, or some of us will have played.
It's how they learn the game.
How you learn the game. And I know for a fact, I started playing football having limited, like I say, those early 90s where I was only literally a child watching big men run into each other. Actually understanding the game, I didn't really get, but I know I played Madden. So there was some things that I understood. Do you get what I'm saying? I think it made a huge difference, particularly to after, like, this in this country. It's weird. I think, Ben, you're a Bears fan.
And are we paying attention at the start?
Yeah. Well, you know, Adam, you should know the answer to that question.
That was a long time ago, to be fair.
But that Bears team, that 85 Bears team, so many UK fans from that team, and any UK fans that I knew, sort of, like I say, basic school, half of the guys who introduced me went to play football. They were Bears fans. Many of them who ended up playing Madden, man, loved it. You get what I'm saying? Absolutely loved Madden. Learned an understanding of the game through Madden.
Yeah, it
worked.
it cannot be overstated how important. And I think it's the thing that gets a little bit forgotten, because for lots of people who are already into it, they kind of took it for granted. I was already a fan when that came out, and I thought, this is great. It never occurred to me that I was often playing with people who didn't really understand the sport, and all of a sudden they know what the run and shoot is, and they know what downs they should blitz on because they've noticed that's when the computer is doing it against them, and all this stuff. It was an unreal kind of coaching tool. He wanted it to feel like it was a coaching tool, which at the time, like, the publishers were thinking, like, well, we don't want it to be a coaching tool. We just want it to be fun. And maybe for many Americans, it was just fun, but it was like a secret teaching tool for
them. Yeah, but you wanted to beat your mates, so you figured out a way to do it.
Exactly.
That's how realistic the game was.
Yeah. I remember when Madden died and we had a bit of a thing talking about him on the podcast. I remember thinking back then that when I first got into it, it was definitely the Channel 4 show and watching it that got me into the game. But I definitely think it was Madden that kept me involved in the game. It was, you know, during that period, because it was a bit alien to me, the amount of off-season that they have. And yet, like, I think you could have easily lost so many fans that weren't interested in it because of the access to it that you could get in terms of the actual season. It was Madden during the early 90s and into that period, I think, that made sure that I stayed and that I'm still a fan now, probably because of that game.
There are a couple of tactical things that I definitely learned from playing Madden before I saw happen on the screen watching the sport. Like the idea of it being second and one and taking a shot downfield because it's almost like a free down where it might go incomplete and you'll just run out of the middle on third and one. And then seeing, oh, hang on, they're actually doing that. I figured that out for myself. I could be an NFL head coach.
I think that's a rite of passage. Once you start, because you've played it so much, and you then see, wait, they're doing what I would do. and then you really feel, oh, you know, I get this. I get this, because you don't have to know every intricacy. But when you know those sort of things and you get a feel for the ebb and flow of a game, it feels really empowering. And it's a sport that can be really quite baffling if you're new to it, if you're not there kind of having someone guiding you through it. And the Madden games were guiding people through it inadvertently in the same way that John Madden did on the broadcast. And the thing is, because we're only getting highlights, he might start talking about something that he's talked about that we didn't get that highlight, so you wouldn't get the full effect. And he had a book out in the mid to late 80s called One Knee Equals 2 Feet. Obviously a reference to the idea of, like, you know, one knee being down. And it was never released over here, but someone I know who was like a book collector, he had it and he lent it to me like in about 2002. And some of it, you know, felt quite out of date because he was making specific examples about players. But it was something I wish I'd been able to read when I was much younger and wished that more people would have had access to, because it was a little bit like, here's how to watch football in a smart way. And there was just so much in there about watch these things. Don't watch this, because you're going to see that eventually anyway. Watch these things. And when these things happen, that means this is going to happen. And it's wonderful. I think the book is long out of print. I'd love to see someone update it. And it's a shame he's not going to be, you know, have his involvement. But I'd like it if someone could update that. I know there have been other books about, like, how to watch the sport. But for me, that one, that was everything that was great about what John Madden could do in terms of bringing people in who didn't fully understand it. And that, and the game became an extension of that. And
he did it as a broadcaster.
His name will live
as well.
Forever.
Yeah. Like, he would... Like I've said this, like I've bored all sorts of people with this, but it's not just NFL, in any sport. The number of commentators that you hear that just regurgitate things you already know, but John Madden didn't. John Madden would see things that you haven't, and he'd replay a play, and you'd see, like, say, oh, look at what the linebacker does here. And you're like, oh, that's how he's made that play. And you were being educated watching.
Yeah, Madden never want, like, a lot of people will talk to show their knowledge and to show, like, I'm clever and I understand this on a level that you don't. Whereas he was like, look what I've spotted. I want you to understand this as well as I do, because I find it fascinating. So I want you to find it fascinating. This is really fun, and you can find it fun. And I don't think we'll ever have anyone quite like him, because just broadcasting has changed so much. And maybe other people are kind of demystifying it, but we watch things in such a different way. And I mean, we all love Red Zone, I'm sure, but I do worry sometimes that, are they going to be a generation? Okay, Craig, okay. But let me finish. I worry we could create a generation of fans who basically just want to see those highlights and can't understand the full ebb and flow of a game. Is that your perspective on it?
Bro, how many times have I said it? I binned off 90% of my fantasy leagues, and I basically refuse to watch Red Zone just because, like, don't get me wrong, I'm a fan of Chris Hansen like the rest of us. You know what I'm saying? As a handsome man, and he loves his football.
Scott,
I'm,
right?
I'm, yeah. you knew what I was saying. So, Adam. But I feel like you lose the game. People make comments. I see it on Twitter. Sorry, X. Guy's a clown.
I wasn't picking you up on that one.
Yeah. And it's like people make comments based on what they saw on Red Zone, the splash play, the big play. Like, there is no understanding of what the thing I love most about football. I don't feel like you get in any other sport, is that everything matters. Every single play matters. You cannot
setting up
get
something
that
in the first quarter that doesn't pay off until the fourth quarter.
This is what I'm saying. You cannot get that without watching a game. You must be immersed in it. You've got to feel what they're going through. And like I said, I love Red Zone, and I do feel like, you know, with the game of fantasy, that's part, actually thinking about it now, I was thinking to myself, why is everything so much better in the 80s and 90s? Why is that? I do think technology has a part to play, but I feel like fantasy has ruined part of the experience of watching football, enjoying football.
So two things on this, Craig. I don't necessarily disagree. with the with obviously your red zone assessment, because I have the same issues. Red zone and fantasy have been huge for bringing in more UK fans, and it's fine for you to dislike those aspects.
It's fine for you to dislike those aspects without
disliking the fact they've brought people in. It's not contradictory. But it has been such a big tool. But there are people who are there watching on Red Zone and they're like, oh, well, this guy's a bust. Like, I can make a call on a rookie's career because I've got Red Zone on. And I can see that pick he just threw. He should never have thrown that. This guy's a bust. I'm like, okay. You do you. I mean, that's also a social media issue of people wanting to have that hot take, you know, and be like, okay, it's everything has to be black and white. It can't be, oh, this kid could develop. Like, this kid's offensive line is not giving him that extra second of time for his wide receivers to get open, and he's rushing his throws. It's, I saw the pick. He's a bust. He's the worst player I've seen. Why didn't they do such and such? And they're often getting that from Red Zone, not from watching, you know, quote unquote, watching tape, not from watching the whole game and seeing what that quarterback does, but basing an assessment of someone's career and prospects on highlights kind of drives me crazy. But I know people are going to do it. They're going to do it in all sports. Like, you know, people will say, oh, that film sucks. And it turns out they watched the trailer. It's, you know, you're going to get it in all things, but it's amplified.
People watch stuff with half an eye on their phone, so you're not really watching things. I'm guilty of that. The best red zone is after 9 o'clock when there are fewer games and you get into a bit more detail. There was a game last year where I was watching the Titans game at 6 o'clock because we're always at 6 o'clock, and that I think at the same time was it the Bills Vikings where it was just the bonkers. Sorry, Mark, it's not deliberate, but. Just all sorts of bonkers things were happening and the social media is going ballistic. And because I was watching the Titans game, and it wasn't really following what was going on. And then I caught 5 minutes of highlights at the end. I thought, okay, just a couple of crazy plays there. But you lose the how did we get here thing. Like, how did we get to that situation where Josh Allen's trying to sneak it on his own goal line? And why was he doing that? What's the context? Like, and I remember watching sort of highlights of this. It's clearly a bonkers game, but I don't get it. I don't know. I don't see what all the fuss is about.
I think, and it looks like it's not on. We'll see if it's on. Condensed games on Game Pass, which we've all kind of got used mm-hmm. to, and I believe that it's currently
they don't have
not
that,
available.
Man. It's such a mistake.
Yeah.
The game of 40, if that's gone, it's...
I mean...
I thought they were bringing it back, but...
Well, let's wait until week one and then get the pitchforks out. I think we probably will be.
The answer will be on the NFL UK Facebook group. If you go and look there, you'll find out all your questions about DAZN, DAZN, whatever you want to call it.
But like, even when you watch one of those games in force, you get to see all the plays. But even then, you don't see the game pan out like you do if you watch the whole thing. And I'm not saying like, oh, look at this. Look at you terrible, filthy casuals watching Red Zone or Game in 40. But it's just a very...
I'm staying that. It's
you wouldn't if you were trying to sell a book to people. But, but you know, it's like there are plenty of ways to watch a game. And you can argue that there is a proper way to watch it. I want as many people to watch as possible, but you want to get to the point where you are then watching the full game and you are getting a really satisfying experience from watching that game. Like, I think Red Zone is fantastic. I think the fact that we can, hopefully, maybe not, watch the game in 40, having these options, I want to have all those options, but there is nothing like watching the full game and seeing it play out. And as you were saying, Craig, it's like you need that context, and things that happen are setting up things that happen later. It's like when you watch a really good film and stuff starts to pay off at the end, that maybe if you were fast forwarding through key scenes, you know, you're not going to get the full thing. Yeah, you see the ending.
The film in 40. There's a thought.
Oh, that's that should be a thing. That should be a thing on Netflix. I'm short on time. Give me this in 40 minutes.
There's a gap in the market for that, definitely.
It really is. I'm surprised with some of the younger generation, young people today, I'm surprised it's not a thing.
Yeah, do you know what? I hear you make a good point, and we've talked a few times on this pod about the London Games. Now, I'm pretty sure all of us have been pretty since they started. Most of us has done all.
Craig,
of,
I've been to, I think, all 33. I've been, I think, all 33.
Oh, wow.
There you go.
Wow.
So that's mad. But most of us have been doing it since it started. But there was definitely something about when I first went, it felt very authentic. Lots of that. And again, I don't want to be a gatekeeper, right? I'd literally criticize that to begin with. But it felt very, very authentic. A lot of people bought in. There was a lot of bloody, I don't know, whatever, Bears jerseys, Dolphins jerseys, and Pats.
You could
jerseys,
age people by what jerseys they're wearing, definitely.
quite literally. But there was something about these were people who cared. I think it speaks to, you called it, you know, this is a niche thing, and we do have ownership of it. You made the you likened it to getting in on the ground floor with sort of your pals going into drum and bass, and I very much feel that way about. I'm a big hip hop head, but I am from the grind era. I'm from the grind. I was there. I experienced it. I lived it, and there's something special about that, right? Being there from the beginning to the end, completely a part of that culture, and there is something about nowadays, I don't want fans to bastardize it. You get me? Like, without being, I don't want to be a gatekeeper. I'm not trying to say you should do it this way, but you should do it this way. Yeah. You know what I mean? I want you to enjoy it and love it, but it is meant to be to treat you with some respect. You get
basically
what I'm saying?
New fans, you are not welcome in our leash.
Not just, but some of you. Like, stop just turning up and making it really long to get home if you don't know what the hell is happening. Do show a little bit of respect to the game. That's what I'm saying.
I mean, I've certainly seen people there at Wembley that, like, thinking, you have no idea what is going on, and how did you get a job as head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars?
Excellent. I think we could... I could talk literally all night. This is, but I'm well aware that this conversation, we could all talk all night. We'll do a bit of AOB to finish. Any other thoughts you want to share, Ben, about, well, I mean, have we even discussed like why you've written this thing or?
Okay. Well, I'll tell you why I've written this thing. And it's because, like, we know how much the sport has grown in this country. We've got all these games in London. We've got all this TV coverage and all this sort of stuff. And I see lots of the times people, in effect, kind of thanking the NFL, thanking the broadcasters for everything they've done and giving them a lot of credit, which, you know, credit where it's due. But my God, nobody ever seems to ever think to actually give fans credit. And everything they've done at times to kind of keep the sport alive in this country in the kind of darker days, and in the modern times, just make sure there was actually a sense of community. And you get it with podcasts like these, having like an authentic UK perspective on these things, not trying to be like, oh, how can we copy an American podcast? How can we make it seem like we're like ESPN or whatever? Like, no, this is our experience and we're going to talk about it from our perspective. And people just were not doing that. And I thought, wait, that nobody's ever like written a history of NFL fans in the UK. Like, there's a book on the special relationship, which is about history of the sport in this country, that is like goes into details of like army teams playing on bases against each other, you know, well before we ever had the NFL here and all this stuff, going into the minutiae there. And I thought, there's a gap in the market for the fans, because I want it to be, you know, I was out the other day and I got a call from Crusader Raider, who's in the book, and he wanted to just say, I've just finished reading the book, and like, you know, thank you so much for like, you know, telling the fans' story. And it was then that it occurred to me, like, there needs to be a kind of a document that is celebrating the fans, that it can be like, look, here we go, here's the first 40 years of what we all did. And I do truly believe that every single NFL UK fan is represented in this book, because they will see themselves in at least one of those chapters, probably more, that they'll be like, oh, that's like my story. Oh yes, that's part of why I became a fan and all these things. So I wanted it. I just want it to feel like it's for absolutely everybody. I don't want people to think, oh, well, it's about the people in the book. The people in the book are stand-ins for all of you. Like, their stories are universal. There are parts of their stories that everyone will be able to relate to. And I just want to celebrate everyone who does anything for the community. Or even if you just sit and watch TV and you love it and you chat to your friends about it, that's you as well. You're all part of this. You're all a part of the reason that we get games in London. It is not just because of Sky Sports and the BBC and Roger Goodell. It's you, because if you're not buying the tickets, if you're not watching these games, none of it happens. So please kind of give yourself a pat on the back and realize we all built this together. Whatever point in the journey you came in, you helped build this to get it where it is today. If you were a fan and you lost interest, you came back, all that stuff, you've played a part. This is your story, and the book is your story. And I'm privileged that I've been able to tell that story, because I think it is actually a really, really important story.
Absolutely.
And it's good that it's out there, because it's another thing that's difficult to explain to people outside of the kind of British niche sports fan experience, how much of a bonding thing can be between two people, even if they're fans of different teams.
Yeah, because we've got more in common. That's it. We've got, as even like if you're fans of rival teams, you've got more in common with each other than someone that's like, oh, that looks like a stupid sport.
Mm.
You know, it brings us all together. And like, I know the publishers are going to push the book in America as well, and I'm hoping that it'll find enough of an audience in America, because I want them to know. I want them to know how we got to this point. And I wasn't sure if anyone wanted to publish this book. I'd had the idea knocking around, and I thought, look, I'm going to put the proposal through. I wanted to go straight to Pitch Publishing, because they're the top independent sports publisher in this country. And I emailed them one morning. We had some emails back and forth. And by the evening, they'd offered me a contract. So clearly, Pitch Publishing felt that there were fans out there who would want to know about this. And the response so far has been absolutely fantastic. Just knowing, I think people are happy that their story is being told. So I hope everybody who reads it loves it and feels that it does represent them. And if you do read it and love it, please leave a review on Amazon. Even if you didn't buy it from Amazon, leave a review on Amazon, because there is nothing more important for a niche book's visibility than Amazon reviews. Because if there are plenty of Amazon reviews, then it keeps getting recommended to people who are searching for anything about American football on the site. So please do that, because all of this will just help us kind of grow the game. And I hope I'm not the last person to write a book about NFL fans in this country. You know, I've started it off. There are going to be niche bits and offshoots of this story that people need to tell.
I love the fact that there's that story written from the fans' perspective, because I still love, and I still get that, like, that little bit of joy whenever you're just talking to some random, or you're meeting a new group of people and you find that one guy who's into the NFL, or one girl who's into the NFL, and you can have a conversation about them, and you're like, oh, this is brilliant. This is someone else who knows a bit about this thing that I know about, and you can talk about it. I was watching a game fairly recently, in a game of cricket in Sophia Gardens in Cardiff. And one of the people, it was a work thing, and one of the people that was from the company that I was in was an NFL fan, was a big Patriots fan. And we ended up, yeah, quite right, that's what I said. But we ended up pretty much sacking off watching the cricket, and we spoke about the NFL the whole time. And now whenever I see him, we have that bit of a connection. And I'm sure that he's been through exactly some of these stages in the book, and some of these chapters represent his fandom as well as they represent mine. So it's brilliant that everyone will kind of recognize themselves from reading it.
Yeah, that's
I'm looking forward to it. I flicked through the first bit, and the nostalgia hit me. I'm going on holiday on the 20th of October, so I put a pin in it. And I'll be getting through it on the beach. I think you've done a good job, man. And I think I make you quite right. And I say this, I made the connection with Grime earlier, and it's only now that you're seeing some people who experienced the era. When I talk about grime, those that don't know, a very, very London-based music scene that got very, very popular over a period of time. And it's only now that people are documenting it. And I love hearing about different experiences of the culture. So I can't wait to get through. I make you quite right. It's a great idea. The start of the book has already got me going. I don't know how I'm going to wait till October, but it's a cool thing to see it documented, man.
It'll be a great beach read. And like what you're saying is absolutely right, because like, you know, you think of kind of those, like the early days of grime as an example. You're just in it. Nobody's thinking, oh, I've got to be making notes about this. You don't. It's just an experience you're having right at that time. But the thing is these sort of things are not documented by quote unquote historians, because these things are niche interests, you know. These are kind of subcultures. So if we don't do it for ourselves, whether that's NFL fans in the UK or grime fans, if we don't do it for ourselves, no one's going to do it for us. No one at like some big publisher, like some like top sports journalist on a newspaper was going to go and do this. You know, it had to be someone a bit more embedded. It had to be someone who's kind of living through these things. And it's the same with grime. It can't just be that it's someone that is like some sort of record executive who's like, you know, just made some money from it. It's got to be people who were involved, but nobody thinks to document it at the time because you're just living it. And there'll be things that I wish we could know about those days, like the early days, Channel 4 and UK fandom at that point, that are kind of lost forever. Some of the magazines, you know, well, the magazines remain, but they were not there right at the beginning, and they don't tell us everything. So these things are important. These subcultures that we have, these aren't the things that are covered on the news until they've already got past a certain point. So yeah, we've got to do it for ourselves.
Absolutely. Obviously buy it from wherever's cheapest and then leave a review on Amazon. That's the message.
Yeah, in effect, leave a review wherever you bought it, if it's possible, and also leave a review on Amazon. If there's one thing you can do to support the book after buying it, it's to leave a review on Amazon. My publisher keeps telling me, make sure people leave reviews on Amazon. It is the key.
I think if there's one message, that seems to be the loudest and clearest.
Even if you've not read it, just go and leave a good review on Amazon.
Yeah.
That's what we've been saying about the pod for how many years? I'm going to go, shit, if you listen, just make sure you put a review. So the American Football Revolution, how Britain fell in love with the NFL. Review it.
Yeah. By James Dixon. That one. Yeah.
Such a prick, Adam.
I know. Very, very quick AOB. I don't have the energy for much more, but this almost feels an anticlimax. Ben, you must have something you want to get off your chest. It's nothing to do with any of this.
Yeah, I do. I guess now I'm put on the spot, and this will feel. I like things that are really niche. I feel this is really niche. I like a little bit of outlet shopping, right? And you know, it'll be like, okay, I'm going to go in like the Nike factory store or whatever, and like, you know, maybe pick up a bargain.
Is this for when you go on BBC World? You've got to have the right outfit.
You joke. I definitely bought that sweatshirt from an outlet shop. I guarantee that. But anyway, I was in an outlet the other day. Shout out MacArthur Glen Bridge End, which is about half hour outside Cardiff, where I was visiting family the other day, and. Like the drive from Cardiff to Bridgend is miserable, but okay. But it's like, I know there's going to be some bargains there. And most importantly, I know there's a Lindt outlet, you know, Lindt, the Swiss chocolate company.
Okay.
So they do they have outlets. There's one near Wembley Stadium. I always go to the Lindt outlets at the Wembley outlet whenever there's a game at Wembley. Highly recommend that. They got it at the O2 as well, where there's outlet shopping. And you can do pick and mix Lindor balls. Now, I love Lindor balls. But like you go and buy them normally in a shop, and there's like about four or five different types that you can get. But the pick and mix, there's a massive selection. Why are there only these outlet shops to do that in? Why there should be a Lindt shop on every high street? Like there should be if your city or town is important enough to have a branch of Hotel Chocolat, it should have a Lindt and a Lindt pick and mix there. I'm not even joking. We probably spent about £50 on Lindor balls. And That won't even take us up until Wembley in October when I have to re-up and I make my daughter's advent calendar because, like, she's so fussy with chocolate. So I just bought this thing with these 25 drawers, painted it in Christmas colors, and you can shove Lindor balls, like two or three in each drawer. So I have to get those from Wembley when the Jags play. Like, shout out to the Jags because you're helping me with advent calendars. There should be a Lindt shop on every major high street, and it would just kill. Everyone should have access.
I've got news for you. And the Sainsbury's in Hoddesdon has a Lindt pick and mix in the Sainsbury's.
We have a Lindt pick and mix in our Sainsbury's, yes.
So it's not just the Hoddesdon. There must be other Sainsbury's that have this.
Well, my local Sainsbury's, and I tend not to go in there.
Well, that's where you've been going wrong.
Yeah, you could have been having Lindt to your heart's content.
There is no Lindt pick and mix in mine.
And Nectar Points, you know, all at the same time.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's good to know. It's good to know. But I still feel there should be a Lindt shop on all these feet. Why does it just have to be in an outlet? The prices are fantastic anyway, but I'll pay the full price. Like, other chocolate brands are available,
but they're not as good.
But we don't like it.
If Lindt wants to sponsor the podcast, I'm sure that'd be great.
Yes.
Pay you in Lindor balls. Yeah. That's good to know. They've got some sort of Sainsbury's hookup because it worries me that people are missing out on some, like, the double chocolate. Double chocolate is my favorite of the Lindor balls. If anyone's trying to buy me any gifts, you can just do that. Or just buy the book. That's probably better. But just buy the book. Forget about the Lindor balls. Don't spend... I must reinforce it. Not spend your money on Lindor balls. Buy the book. If you were going to buy the book and Lindor balls, buy two copies of the book.
And could you? Buying Lindor balls does not help
the community.
Could I go and buy loads of Lindor balls, but then review the book on Amazon?
That's win-win. Everyone's a winner. Yeah,
everyone's a winner.
Just don't get Lindor stains all over the pages while you're doing it.
Or if you do, just then buy another copy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you're doing well enough that you've got two televisions or two toilets, buy a copy for each. A copy for each room in your house.
Absolutely right. Yeah.
If the TV is in the toilet as well, then my God, you are living the dream. But then you might not need the book in the toilet. I don't know. Ad breaks, I guess, because you're watching live TV, because that's what Craig likes to do. Nothing but live TV.
Nothing but live.
You need it for the ad breaks.
Yeah.
No ad breaks.
Not turning over to
Red
Zone either.
Not commercial free TV.
Yeah.
Mark, 30 seconds, AOB. Go on.
The new series of Ahsoka started the other day. First two episodes, absolutely brilliant. Loved it so far. Bit confusing on the timeline of where it fits in the rest of the
Have you watched Rebels?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's like there's contradictory messages about, I think, in the first couple of episodes about where it fits. But in terms of action, loved it so far. Brilliant.
Craig, 30 seconds AOB. I say 30 seconds just out of optimism.
Yeah, I won't be rushed. shout out to Ahsoka. That is good. I've only watched episode one. I've seen a few negative comments about that. I'm going to take the rest of the time that I decide to take to talk shit about Man United. Not only were we, promised greatness, not only were we hoodwinked into believing this is a false dawn, a new dawn, turned out to be a false dawn.
Definitely a false
dawn. They it's have that also, way around if it's going to be one or the other, isn't it?
I had 50-50. Mm. They did a great job in marketing our new kits, which are fantastic, some of them. Me being the fan, jumped in the sauce, ordered my shirt on the 25th of July. All comes the 24th of August, and Craig can't get a shirt. What's going on? What are you talking about? Biggest club in the world. I ordered my shirt over a month ago, and they're telling me the audacity, the cheek of this lot. They're telling me, sorry, we took too many orders and we haven't been able to pack them and send them out. What the fuck? What's going on over there? What clown show are we running, mate? Listen, boys, we can't get transfers in. We can't seem to string passes together. We can't get shots on target. And you can't send out shirts that you are... Come on, man.
You seem much angry about the shirt than about the performances.
But Craig, did you order a Mason Greenwood shirt? And that's the problem. We're not going to send... We now can't send it out. And they're trying to be like, oh, no, we're just taking too many orders. And they're like, oh, we've got to try and peel these off the shirts now and put something else on.
If you've ever seen the Twitter account Ruined Football Shirts, I highly recommend. Like, you'll find someone at a game with a terrible out of date shirt or something completely inappropriate. That would be right up there.
Can I just say about Chris Milner, who runs National Vintage League, and him saying about him being offered a Ray Carruth jersey, and it's just like, oh my god,
wow,
who's got a Ray Carruth jersey?
Somebody I saw someone at Wembley game, like, I probably before he died, but definitely after he was in prison, with an Aaron Hernandez jersey. No, it's like straight up.
I mean, but at least you can understand why Aaron Hernandez had jerseys.
Okay,
you wanted to do throw it away. What do you want him to do? Throw the jersey away? It's not his fault he went on a murder spree. The guy bought the jersey.
Yes, throw the jersey away.
That's away. That's exactly what you do.
at least Aaron Hernandez was actually proper gangster. Was Ray Carruth just paid someone? You know, that's just being rich.
He committed his own murders. What a hero! Yeah.
at least do your own dirt.
Yeah. I haven't got my Houston Oilers throwback jersey yet, by the way. Ordered about the same time. I'm not throwing my toys out of the pram about it.
I don't know what. Having seen Man United in the last 10 years, Craig, I don't know what element of that club you think is run properly. So it shouldn't surprise you in the slightest.
I told you they get me with a sauce every year. I fucking love it. You know what I'm like? Every year they do me, mate.
It's a new shiny shirt.
Them green shirts and them red pinstripes. Listen, I'm gonna look fantastic. So sort it out, lads. Jesus.
Oh, but Pat, please take us somewhere else.
I've got to say, as a fan of Stevenage, stories about shirts not coming in yet really fall on like deaf ears. There was a season we didn't get our away shirts till after Christmas, mate. Just pipe down.
That's not acceptable. That is not acceptable.
It's true. It was pish. I've told this story already on the group WhatsApp, but I'm going to tell it here as well. I try to be green with my days out. So I got the bus to St Albans for a family day out. Took 2 hours each way to travel 15 miles. We were only there for 2.5 hours. So we actually spent more time on buses by an hour and a half than we did at the town, city, wherever. It's not a way to spend a day out in Hertfordshire, much as I'd love to recommend it. It's hot and manky.
How long would it have taken if you'd driven from your house to where you needed to go?
25 minutes.
Oh, Jesus.
It's not a good expenditure. Also wasn't my idea, but I'm glossing over that.
I mean, that's the crux of it, surely.
Yeah. The worst thing was, like, about an hour and a half into the journey back, the person who planned it turned to me and went, see, having fun? No, not really. An hour and a half on public transport is a chore that you go through to get to somewhere nice. And I had dinner in a park by some goose turds. You know, I could have done that in Stevenage.
I mean, are you sure they weren't just unwrapped Lindor balls?
I hope so.
But that size?
A similar consistency, given it was 30 degrees.
I think that the bus company is handling the logistics for the Man United club shop, by the sounds of things.
It does seem that way. So. Yeah. 10 seconds for me. I was watering my hanging baskets tonight and... Well, I wasn't. I was trying to get the hose out of the thing, and that's not a euphemism either. And I just grabbed the hose and completely sprayed myself head to toe, absolutely drenched. Had to wring my shirt out.
That's
really unpleasant.
This is all a euphemism. This is all. I'm on the wrong podcast here. This is something a little.
You're on the wrong podcast. I can tell
a little
that
bit racy.
True.
I thought this was a family-friendly podcast.
It's not a family-friendly
I did not think that.
Podcast.
I did not.
Definitely not.
Told you.
The
you checked that on
family.
Twitter, didn't you?
The Manson family. Right, this has gone on a long time. I'm really sorry for taking
when
up
do we start recording?
I mean, now. Let's.
Should we start? Should we start the proper show? We've got all professional. Nobody can see that we've been drinking. And we'll start now and it'll be fine. I'm ready.
I didn't even get to talk about Curtis Martin. I didn't get to talk about the 2000 Jets. I got another hour in me alone.
Good.
Craig loves a monologue.
Maybe another time. But if you fancy talking about the Curtis Martin era Jets, let Craig know and you and him can go and get together.
I mean, Curtis Martin's from the days where like a running back could have a good long career and without like. Curtis Martin is not a Hall of Famer, right? Let's just stay that. But he was just one of these. Sorry, it's a truth bomb. But he was one of these just relentless competitors who could just do such a good job for a long time. And running backs just don't do that anymore. So shout out to Curtis Martin.
I can think of a pretty prolific running back over a long period of time. But you've got better things to talk about. Like
there's
like,
not enough of them now. Not enough of them now.
No, there aren't very many of them. That's true. That is very true. Right. Thank you ever so much for indulging me and the rest of us, but mostly me, I think. That couldn't be more up my street, this whole subject matter and this book. I can't wait to actually read it properly rather than skim through and pick out bits and pieces, but excellent work.
You've seen enough to write a review, though, so I just want to make that clear.
Well, do you want a... You just want any review, really, don't you? Doesn't
yeah, I want I want 5 stars, glowing. It can be a short review, just yeah. If you could all just create 10 more Amazon accounts and just do that, then we'll be golden. Yeah,
our assignments are clear. Same to anyone listening to this. Anyone that's got this far, anyway, which won't be many. Right, thank you ever so much. It's been great to chat. All the best with. Huge sales of this thing, which is going to be absolutely excellent. So cheers, Ben. Cheers, everyone else. Go well.
Nice one, boys.
Thank you.
Just kept going forever though, right?
Yeah,
the 90s, mate, the chat just feels like it was better in the 90s. We didn't talk actual football.
That's what I'm annoyed about. We didn't talk about actual football, Adam.
We're not here to talk about actual football.
No, you fucked it, mate. I want to